We all love the exotic. Nothing is more fascinating than faraway places, people, languages, and culture. For the Russian Empire during the 19th century, it was the mysterious East, the Orient, that held them spellbound. Whether it be the musical Steppes of Central Asia by Borodin, the Caucasian sketches of Mikhail Politov-Ivanov, the Arabian dance in Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, Islamay by Mili Balakirev, or Alexander Glazunov's Oriental Rhapsody, the fringes of and countries bordering on the vast Russian Empire figured greatly in their musical works. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for the mother of all exotic Russian orientalistic pieces, Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade. I think I just made up the word orientalistic. A few words about Russia's greatest hyphenated named composer are in order. Nikolai Andreevich Rimsky-Korsakov, born in beautiful downtown Tikhvin, March 18th, 1844. Where is Tikhvin, you ask? About 120 miles east of St. Petersburg, which is pretty much nowhere. The best tourist attraction is probably the house he grew up in. Nevertheless, he came from noble roots, and one of his ancestors, Ivan Rimsky-Korsakov, was a lover of Catherine the Great. It wasn't music that fascinated the young Rimsky-Korsakov, it was the sea. His older brother, by 22 years, Voin Andreevich, was a prestigious naval officer, navigator, and explorer, and because of him, he became obsessed with all things nautical. Young Nikolai was determined to become a sailor like his brother and entered the school for naval cadets in St. Petersburg at age 12. He graduated 6 years later in 1862, and like a good young naval officer, was obliged to go to sea, and go to sea he did. He boarded the clipper ship Almaz and sailed on a 32-month voyage around the world. Among the many cities he visited were London, Rio de Janeiro, New York, and San Francisco. I am fascinated by whether he visited our fair port city of Baltimore, and based on my research, who knows? While young Nikolai did not study music formally during his teens, he was studying privately. During this time at the Naval Academy, he studied piano and composition with a man named Theodore Kenil, and it was he who introduced Rimsky to the composer dilettante Mili Balakirev. Balakirev, together with Cesar Cui, Modest Mussorgsky, and Alexander Borodin, were young aspiring composers devoted to creating a uniquely Russian musical sound distinct from the Austro-German art music. They would eventually become famous as the Moguchaya Kuchka, the Mighty Handful, or as we know them today, the Russian Five. Rimsky recalled, "With what delight I listened to real business discussions of instruments, part writing, etc. And besides, how much talking there was about current musical matters. All at once, I had been plunged into a new world unknown to me, formerly only heard of in the society of my dilettante friends. That was truly a strong impression." While Rimsky tried his best to maintain his musical skill during his extended cruise, he grew less interested as the endless months at sea wore on. He said, "Thoughts of becoming a musician and composer gradually left me altogether, and distant lands began to allure me. Naval service never pleased me much and hardly suited my character at all." When he returned to Russia, Rimsky had only the lightest of naval duties, and it was Balakirev who rekindled his interest in music once again. With Balakirev's encouragement, he completed and then reorchestrated a symphony, which was eventually performed. Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov was now officially a dilettante Russian composer. He spent the next 6 years working with Balakirev and other members of the Russian Five, honing his craft. Then, in 1871, he did the unthinkable for a dilettante composer. He joined the establishment. At 27 years old, Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov became the only member of the Russian Five to join the faculty of the much-hated St. Petersburg Conservatory and become a professor of composition. And by hated, I mean by the rest of the Russian Five. By the way, he was still a member of the naval service and taught his composition classes in uniform. He had to be ready to go to sea at any moment. Rimsky-Korsakov quickly realized that he knew very little about music theory, counterpoint, and harmony. He decided to maximize this opportunity and, as he put it, became one of the conservatory's most devoted students as a faculty member. He eventually became one of the greatest pedagogues in Russia and numbered among his many students Anatoly Yadov, Mikhail Politov-Ivanov, Ottorino Respighi, and a very young Igor Stravinsky. There were advantages and disadvantages in joining the academic establishment. On the plus side, the composer became quite adept at his craft, and his works now contained first-rate and complex counterpoint and harmony. On the minus side, Rimsky's colleagues found his music had become scholarly and stilted. Borodin commented, after hearing Rimsky's Third Symphony, that he couldn't help, quote, feeling that this is the work of a German Herr Professor who has put on his glasses and is about to write eine große Symphonie in C. Fortunately, Rimsky-Korsakov managed to take the best of German academia and combine it with Russian inspiration. It was through editing two collections of Russian folk songs that he found his mature style. Academic counterpoint now took a back seat to a folkloric and more direct melodic approach. Another source of inspiration came as a result of tragedy. With the passing of Mussorgsky in 1881 and Borodin in 1887 came the opportunity for Rimsky-Korsakov to edit and complete their works. Working on Borodin's opera Prince Igor and Mussorgsky's opera Boris Godunov seems to have inspired Rimsky-Korsakov to great things. Between 1887 and 1888, he wrote his three greatest orchestral works, the Capriccio Espagnol, the Russian Easter Overture, and his best-known work today, Scheherazade. Scheherazade was not Rimsky-Korsakov's first foray into symphonic Orientalism. That would be his second symphony slash symphonic suite, Antar. He began work on that in 1868 and revised it twice in 1875 and 1891. Having never spent much time in the Orient in 1868 or even near it, the composer relied on Arabian folk melodies from books. Fortunately for Scheherazade, the composer, and us, the composer took a trip eastward in 1874. Together with his wife, he went to Sevastopol in Crimea, then is now a large Russian naval base, and from there to the small town of Bakhchisarai. The former capital of the Crimean Khanate provided Rimsky and his relatively new bride with plenty of exotic sights and sounds. He recalled the coffee houses, the shouts of its vendors, the chanting of the muezzins on the minarets, the services of the mosques, and the oriental music. It was while hearing the gypsy musicians of Bakhchisarai that I first became acquainted with oriental music in its natural state, and I believe I caught the main feature of its character. In front of every coffeehouse, there was continual playing and singing. A three-day trip to Constantinople 7 years later and the fabulous and extremely popular Tales of the Arabian Nights gave the composer all the inspiration he needed to write Scheherazade. Rimsky-Korsakov described Scheherazade as, quote, an orchestral suite in four movements, closely knit by the community of its themes and motifs, yet representing, as it were, a kaleidoscope of fairy tale images and designs of Oriental character. To ensure the proper mood, he had the following printed in the score and in the program opening night. The Sultan Shahryar, convinced that all women are false and faithless, vowed to put to death each of his wives after the first nuptial night. But the Sultana Scheherazade saved her life by entertaining her lord with fascinating tales told seriatim for 1,001 nights. The Sultan, consumed with curiosity, postponed from day to day the execution of his wife and finally repudiated his bloody vow entirely. Then there is the tricky issue of titles for the various movements. Rimsky both agreed to and denied the use of programmatic titles for each movement. In his autobiography, My Life, he said, "In composing Scheherazade, I meant these hints to direct only slightly the listener's fancy on the path that my own fancy had traveled, and to leave more minute and particular conceptions to the will and mood of each. All I wanted was that the hearer, if he liked the piece as symphonic music, should carry away the impression that it is undoubtedly an Oriental narrative of numerous and varied fairy tale marvels, and not merely four pieces played one after another and based on themes common to all four." Rimsky-Korsakov's student Anatoly Yadov suggested titles, and when the work is heard today, the following titles are used. Movement 1, The Sea and Sinbad's Ship. Movement 2, The Tale of the Calendar Prince. Movement 3, The Tale of the Young Prince and the Young Princess. Movement 4, The Festival at Baghdad, The Sea, The Ship Goes to Pieces Against a Rock, Surmounted by a Bronze Warrior, Festival in Baghdad, Reprise. To the music, mes petits amis, finally! First movement, The Sea and Sinbad's Ships. We begin with a hugely imposing and serious theme, which is often said to represent the stern and angry, jilted Sultan. Whether this actually represents the Sultan is up to you, but this theme is played in unison by most of the orchestra, and it certainly is austere. It's also interesting in that it is a whole tone scale downward from E to F sharp. Whole tone scales are scales that use only whole tones as opposed to mixing whole and half tones. Here's a nice example of a regular scale going down. And here's the whole tone scale going down. Here's the actual theme, and notice that it's rather dissonant, especially at the end, with that A-sharp B-flat. Then we have a series of chords in the winds, which completely contrast the opening. If this music sounds a bit familiar, it might remind you of the opening chords of Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream overture. Here's the Mendelssohn. In both cases, we are being invited to listen to some beautiful storytelling. It's an invocation. Next, we meet Scheherazade as represented by the solo violin underscored by the harp. Tonal, sinuous, rhythmically flexible, this is a theme that can get in and out of trouble and just might make it through 1001 nights. I must confess, it's awfully fun to play. And what about those fabulous chords on the harp? Just three of them. Really, two. The first and third are the same. Such a small detail, and yet it makes the piece unforgettable. Here are the harp chords again with the theme. Now it's time for the C. Using the Sultan's theme, the C churns endlessly in the strings. Listen here as the theme is now taken by the horn and flute, then the oboe, and then the clarinet. Then Rimsky-Korsakov combines the two themes as solo violin Scheherazade goes to C, joined by first mate clarinet. Here's the C at the height of its strength and fury in the brass. Thank you. finally, at the end of the movement and at the end of the day, all is calm, the sea is finally still. Movement 2 is the tale of the Calendar Prince. Calendars were a kind of fakir, conjurer monks who told tales and did tricks. They're usually from the lower classes, but ours, being a prince, is in disguise. The story is told by Scheherazade as she begins the movement. Then we meet our main theme. It's one of the great themes in the whole piece, and it's courtesy of a fabulous bassoon solo. Then the oboe has a go. Then the whole orchestra. Suddenly, we get the sense that something is coming toward us or about to happen. Finally it does, and it seems awfully festive. Has our fakir prince arrived together with a troop of conjurers? Then he charms a snake right before our eyes. Movement 3, The Young Prince and the Young Princess, is said to be about Prince Kamar al-Zana and Princess Budur. They were said to be in love and to look so much alike that they resembled brother and sister. In contrast to our previous fast 2 movements, this is our languorous slow adagio. Here's the opening theme. After a number of gorgeous reorchestrations, we get a key change, a faster tempo, and a more upbeat mood, but our theme is actually more or less the same. And then we return to our languorous beginning. Then Scheherazade appears. The movement ends with both fast and slow versions of the theme. Our last movement is a series of stories or images: the festival at Baghdad, the sea, the shipwreck, and a conclusion. We begin with a very angry sultan. Scheherazade then tries to calm him down. Here's our festival in Baghdad. Oh my gosh, here's the theme from Movement 2, the calendar princess stopped by the festival. And, direct from Movement 3, our prince and princess also make an appearance. Here's the shipwreck. And then we reprise the Sultan and the Sea. Now that the ship is destroyed, the sea is silent. Scheherazade gives her postlude. The Sultan is calmed and agrees to let her live indefinitely. Don't forget our Mendelssohnian Midsummer Nightian Dreamian chords. And of course, our eponymous Scheherazade ends the piece as well she should. So what is indeed great about Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade? 1. Orchestral color and orchestration. While he started out his musical life as a dilettante composer, Rimsky-Korsakov soon became a master academic and pedagogue. He learned everything there was to know about orchestration, taught it to hundreds of students, and orchestrated the unfinished works of his contemporaries. He wrote a treatise on the subject, which is still being used today. There isn't an instrument in Scheherazade that doesn't have something brilliant and beautiful to do. 2. Incredible results with a minimum of thematic material. So many of the themes resemble each other, and there is a staggering amount of repetition in this piece. Nevertheless, the dazzling color and texture carry the day. Scheherazade is a fantastic example of alternative ways to structure a large symphonic work without using standard German practices. 3. While Rimsky-Korsakov never went to Baghdad, his fantasy Baghdad leaves us completely fulfilled. Who wouldn't want to go and read the Arabian Nights after hearing this music? His musical pictures of the sea are among the finest in the repertoire. While Rimsky might have suffered through his 32-month-long journey around the world, we are clearly its beneficiaries. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this has been a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade.